So we're going to start in chapter 15. So we'll begin on lesson 14 down on Absalom's conspiracy, and that'll start us in 2 Samuel 15. So where we're at in the class, you know, we've had the meeting and we had a class and then we talked about affectionate love. So to give a recap, we're into David's reign. David's God's anointed, and we see that recently God has made a covenant with David. Now we're moving into a period of time where David sits some tumultuous times. He sits some troubles and trials of his own doing. It's interesting to me, if you look at the story of David, how the Holy Spirit has chosen to let us know about David, in the sense that you see David is a complete contrast to Saul. He was God's anointed, but he was constantly after God's own heart. You see a lot of things happen that are good, that you see David's love and his diligence to God and wanting to exalt him. And then all of a sudden we start getting like marks against David, is the way you look at it. You know, David starts to stumble a little bit, and we see several different things happen. Did he stumble before now and God just didn't tell us? He was building David's character up in the story, and then we're going to see how maybe David is humbled a little bit, or we see how no man's perfect and how maybe we should handle situations and circumstances that we get ourselves into. I don't know. But we've hit this kind of tumultuous time in David's life where he's dealing with different issues. And like I said, that's of his own doing. And so we're into chapter 15 and we're going to talk about Absalom. So what was Absalom doing in chapter 15, verses 2 through 6? He was. So Absalom is slowly building a following. So it said, you see in verse 2, it says, Absalom used to rise early and stand beside the way of the gate. And when any man had a suit to come to the king for judgment, Absalom would call to him and say, "From what city are you?" And he would say, "Your servant's from one of the tribes of Israel." And so Absalom, "See, your claims are good and right, but no man listens to you on the part of the king. Moreover, Absalom would say, 'Oh, that one would appoint me judge in the land, that every man who has any suit or cause could come to me and I would give him justice.' And when a man came near to prostrate himself before him, he would put out his hand and take hold of him and kiss him. In this manner, Absalom dealt with all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole away the hearts of men of Israel." We live in a time and place where communication is so much easier and it's instantaneous. Something happens, somebody can post about it, tweet about it, you can get an email about it, you can see it on TV. I mean, there's all those types of ways you find this stuff out. In this period in time, it's hard to know what's going on from place to place and time to time. And I don't know, I mean, Absalom's doing these things. I don't know if David was even aware of it. David didn't choose to do anything about it. But you see here that in a kingdom such as, this kingdom of God's people, Israel, you see that things like this can happen where Absalom could be in a completely separate place and David may not know what he's doing. But what we do see is Absalom is undermining David. He's undermining David and he's stealing the hearts of the men, stealing the hearts of the men of Israel away from him. And David, again, is a man after God's own heart. Are the people fickle? Seems to be that the people are fickle. Maybe Absalom's good at presenting himself in a way that would endear him to the people. I'm not exactly sure why he was able to steal them away. David had been a good king and doing what is right, but maybe that's not what they were wanting. So what we do see is that Absalom's stealing away the heart of the people. What did Absalom end up doing in verses 10 through 12? Conspired to take over the throne. Was he successful? Yes, he was successful. But Absalom sent spies throughout Israel and Judah. But Absalom sent out spies through all the tribes of Israel, saying, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say Absalom is king in Hebron." Then 200 men went with Absalom from Jerusalem who were invited and went innocently, and they did not know anything. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. I'll qualify my statement in the fact that Absalom was successful. He was able to run David out of the capital. He was able to exalt himself to a specific position. But David doesn't go away, and we'll see that. So when I say that he was successful enough to usurp the power that David had and to turn the hearts of the people away. How long did he reign? How long was he king? David was still around, so there may be that. There was that turmoil and inner fighting. But I would say it was successful because of chapter 18 on, where it talks about some other stuff. And we'll get to that. But I'm qualifying that statement that, yes, I believe that Absalom did usurp the throne of David. David had to regain that power. And we'll look at that. Though he didn't reign for but a short period of time and David was still around with people loyal to him. Was Absalom a godly man and were his actions of the Lord?
No.
Kind of wonder, you know, David's the anointed. He's God's anointed. God allowed this to happen. And some of this I threw in because you see, people aren't who they say they are. And we've got to be careful about that. And then why does God do what he does? Or why does God allow what he does? But you look over at verse 8. For your servant vowed. So this is when he wants to go to Hebron. For your servant vowed a vow while I was living in Geshur and Arm, saying, if the Lord shall indeed bring me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. And the king said, go in peace. So he arose and went to Hebron. You'd like to take people at face value. That's not what Absalom was doing. I also wonder, you know, from that, you know, from this context, why did God allow Absalom to usurp the throne in the way he did? You just wonder. So it was a query to me because, you know, if David was God's anointed and from David was, you know, all the kingdoms were to be blessed, then why did this happen? And what would your answer be to that? Why was this allowed to happen?
We don't know.
We can surmise maybe this is part of the punishment that God gave David, that he would, you know, his house wouldn't be spared from the sword. Not really sure, but it's just interesting. He claims to be a man of God, but he's conspiring behind him. He says that if the Lord shall indeed bring me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. We also know this. We know he's not of God because he took justice in his own hands. He didn't abide by the law. You see where he goes into David's concubines. There's so many other things that he's done. He's not a man of God. So moving into 15:13, why did David flee Jerusalem and who went with him?
To escape Absalom.
So if you're usurping the throne, what would be the one thing you'd try to do? Get rid of the king. You don't want to run him off because he might come back around, and we kind of see that happening. You want to catch, kill, whatever you can do to control the situation. So you're going to kill the king, and David knows that. So the messenger came to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom. David said, all his servants who are with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee. Otherwise, none of us will escape from Absalom. Absalom's looking to kill his father to take the throne. Not anointed by God. It's just something he chose to do. Again, he's not a man of God, not a godly man. Who went with David?
His servants.
Who else?
All his household except his concubines.
Okay, all his household except for the 10 concubines. Who else?
The infidel.
Okay.
Hold on.
Somebody said Ahithophel. Ahithophel stayed behind. Okay, he stayed behind. Somebody else was saying something?
All the people with him.
Okay, I heard something else.
His mighty men.
So Zadok and Abiathar didn't go with him. It says, look, in verse 18, now all his servants passed on beside him, all the Cherethites and all the Pethelites and the Gittites, 600 men who had come with him from Gath, passed on before the king. So Linda was right when I said all the servants. I was kind of looking for the breakdown there of the Cherethites and all the Pethelites and the Gittites. And then I'm not exactly sure reading the way this is written, 600 men who had come with him from Gath, if that's included in those or if that's a separate group breaking out. But we know that David had his servants, some people, we had his mighty men. And I'm not sure if that is an explanation of who these 600 men were or if that's included with. But David left with a contingent of people who were loyal to him. And then who did David tell to stay behind in 24 through 37? So some people came to him, wanted to go with him, and he told them to stay behind. Who were those people? Zadok and Abiathar, they came out, they brought the Ark of the Covenant. And their sons, Jonathan and Ahimaaz. That's right, exactly. However it is, Jonathan, the other guy. They came out, but David told them to stay. He says in verse 25, "Return the ark to the of God to the city. If I find favor in the sight of the Lord, then He will bring me back again and show me both it and His habitation." We have Jonathan staying behind too. Who else stayed behind? Who else came to him and stayed? Who David told to stay behind? Hushai. All right, Hushai stayed behind as well. Now, we see these people that are, you know, who are told to stay behind. And what do they wind up being for David? His contingent of what?
Spies.
And they're, you know, we don't think about it in those times. But yeah, this is his secret agents. You know, this is those people who are going to stay behind to infiltrate the kingdom, to report back to David. They're the ones who are going to relay information to him in such a way that maybe Absalom could be taken care of. So we see Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, stay behind with their sons, Jonathan and the other guy. And then we have Hushai. Now, Hushai, let's see. Hushai, why was he told specifically to stay behind? To be a spy, but what was? There you go.
What's his name?
Ahithophel.
Yep.
Okay, that's it. So you've got these priests and their sons who stay behind, but he specifically told Hushai to stay behind so that he could thwart the council of Ahithophel. And we'll get into him as we get into the next. Yes, sir.
As I understand, all of these people left Jerusalem and went east towards the Jordan River. And they were going up the Mount of Olives. And then David has this realization, I'm going to send Zadok back. And so Zadok goes back so he can get close to Absalom. And then he meets Hushai near the top of the Mount of Olives and says, I want y'all to go back. So this was out of Jerusalem.
This was.
People were returning back. But they all vacated initially towards the way of the wilderness east.
And those men chose to vacate. It doesn't say that David brought them with him. It says they met him on the road. You know, so both Zadok and Abiathar bring in the ark, and he tells them to go back. You know, you see the loyalty to David and what he's done. You know, you see these men. We recognize you as king. We're going to bring God, the Ark of the Covenant with us. No, I want you to go back. If God wishes me to return, I'll return. And then Hushai too. You see another one that we did mention. I think his name is Ida, the Gittite. And Ida hadn't been in there for but a day, and he lets him stay. He ends up being one of his commanders. That's verse 19. Ida the Gittite, why will you also go with us? Return and remain with the king, for you are a foreigner and also an exile. Return to your own place. You came only yesterday, and I shall today make you wander with us while I go where I will. Return and take back your brothers, mercy, truth, and be with you. But he wants to stay with them. You see this loyalty to David. We've talked about in class, you know, loyalty to David. We've talked about godly men. And in this instance, what we see is loyalty to David, being a good leader, maybe a just, righteous person. You see these people wanting to be with him. So he's, yes, to Josh's point, we'll get to a little bit more of the his leaving of Jerusalem and maybe the path in which he took as we get into the next class. But yes, they're moving out of Jerusalem. They're moving up the Mount of Olives when these men find him. Now, next question. What does Ziba tell David when he's asked about Mephibosheth? So here you have Ziba. He was a servant of Saul. Now he's a servant from Mephibosheth. He shows up and he's got these mules with all this food. He's here to supply David. And when David asks, he says in verse 3, "Behold, he is staying in Jerusalem, for he said, 'Today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me.'" Mephibosheth, explained to him that Mephibosheth is staying behind to try to regain maybe some prestige of his house, maybe to take over the throne. It says here, restore the kingdom. We're going to deal with that later. So we're getting these name drops, and I'm trying to make sure we cover them clearly because they're all going to come into play in these next few chapters. So understanding who they are and what's been said as we deal with David being gone and then David's return. Another name drop. Who is Shimei, and what is he doing as David leaves? Shimei, maybe it's Shimei.
He's at the house of Saul.
Mm-hmm.
Hurling abuse and stones at them as they're taking their journey. I guess on the other side of Mount Olives, or
he's come into Barum. So he's probably on the downside of the Mount of Olives. He's coming into this northeastern city as he's making his way away from Jerusalem. And he comes to this guy who's sitting there cursing him and throwing rocks at him and telling him he's getting what he deserves. So verse 7, get out, you man of bloodshed and worthless fellow. The Lord has returned upon you all the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into your hand, your son Absalom. And behold, you are taken in your own evil, for you are a man of bloodshed. Now, I don't know what he knew. But if he knew anything about Saul, he knew Saul wasn't a godly man. If he knew anything about Absalom, he knew Absalom wasn't a godly man. But God works in mysterious ways. And here we kind of see that from the standpoint of David. David says in verse 10, what have I had to do with you, sons of Zerah? He's talking about Abishai wanting to go kill him. If he curses and the Lord has told him, curse David, then who shall I say, why have you done so? Then David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my son who came out from me seeks my life. But how much more now this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him. Perhaps the Lord will look on my affliction and return good to me instead of his cursing this day. He views that as God cursing him as he's leaving the city. And I can't tell you if that's really what God wanted him to do or not. I mean, he says that here. It's interesting because what he's hurling at him is not true. I mean, Saul was a ungodly man. Absalom shouldn't be a king. So it's just maybe it's humbling David as he's leaving, dealing with the consequences of his actions.
Well, you know, David, if it's on his mind what he was guilty of with that murder of Uriah, he is, you know, if man of bloodshed and murderer are synonymous, then he does qualify as a man of bloodshed for, you know, ordering Uriah's murder. But what's really neat about David here is that his heart and his soul are open-minded to receiving. Is this something I need to be hearing that God intends? He's not just immediately like put off by this guy hurling abuse and ordering put into death. Yeah, he has the ability to put this guy to death. It sounds like it's one guy, and he's got men with him. But instead, he's humble and, you know, introspective. Like, is this something I need to hear at this moment? Is this something God intends? If so, maybe so. And he doesn't order his death. Rather, you know, he's being careful and cautious, not just reactive to this insult.
You know, I don't know if bloodshed and murder are synonymous. I mean, David was a man of bloodshed, and I think I take it closer to the point we're talking about, not of Uriah's death as much as I think about, you know, David may be thinking about, well, I should have dealt with Absalom the way I should have to begin with. I brought Absalom back. I should have put him to death for the murder of Amnon. I didn't. So maybe his introspective on, I didn't follow God's will, and I think that's a great word for it, introspective, thinking about what I've done. So as he's, you know, and humbling or causing himself to be humbled by these curses. I mean, we knew it was a bloodshed, and I just, you know, you wonder what's going through David's head as he's going through here. But he obviously feels like maybe this is from the Lord. Maybe I'm meant to lower myself down, and then I'll if God wants me to return, I'll return, but leave him alone. And so it's interesting as he's leaving the city, what point we've gotten to David. David was God's anointed. Now he's fallen from, I won't say fallen from grace, but he's fallen from this power. Now he's being run out of town. And now you've got this lowly Benjamite who's hurling curses and stones at him. Which will bring us into 15. So you've got David's run out of town. He finally, verse 14, says the king and all the people who were with him arrived weary, and he refreshed himself there. Now that would be the fords at the wilderness. Verse 28 of 2 Samuel 15 says, see, I'm going to wait at the fords of the wilderness until word comes from you to inform me. So he has left the city. He has gone out past Bahurim, and he's over the Mount of Olives past Bahurim, and now he's headed towards, we find out later, more towards the Jordan River. So he's out by these fords of the wilderness. that maybe, having looked that up, may have been Gilgal. I don't know that for sure, but this just gives you a trajectory of where he's going. He's leaving the city and heading towards the Jordan River. Moving into this lesson 15, I put this quote at the top, and it's back from 2 Samuel 12. You know, just maybe this is why this is going on. You know, the sword shall never depart from your house. Behold, I will raise up evil against you from your household. I will even take your wives before your eyes and give them to your companions. And he will lie with your wives in broad daylight, and you did it secretly. I will do this before all Israel. And I've kind of abbreviated it down, but to get a picture, because the sword hasn't left his household, and now we're about to see the rest of this fulfillment. So I asked the question, upon entering Jerusalem, what was Absalom advised to do?
Sleep with David's concubines.
Sleep with David's concubines.
In public.
Okay. What was the purpose of this action? This is a, what you think, you know, this, I don't know if there's a hard and fast answer to this, but I have some thoughts.
To show everyone
that he's taken over David's house. It says to make him odious to David. And I wonder if, odious means extremely unpleasant or repulsive, you know, to completely sever ties with David. I'm not my father. I'm planning to put him to death. Maybe to come out of his shadow. Let me show you. He's not the person he used to be. He's not this man of power. He's got this prestige, but I'm going to knock him down a peg by sleeping with his concubines. Maybe to assert his dominance. You know, my dad's over here, now just the icing on the cake is I'm going to sleep with his concubines. It does say, let's see. Verse 21, all Israel will hear that you have made yourself odious to your father. And it also says the hands of all who are with you will also be strengthened. So those who are with him, maybe they see this and it reaffirms their, you know, Absalom is reaffirming his dominance or his power. And maybe that also rallies those people who are with him together to see that Absalom is asserting his power and can do so. Who is Ahithophel? He's David's counselor. Now, I skip past that, but this is who counseled Absalom to do this. It's interesting that he would counsel him to do such a thing, but let's look at Ahithophel for a second. How was this counsel of Ahithophel regarded?
As from the Lord.
Huh?
As from the Lord.
As from the Lord. Was it from the Lord?
No.
No, but it's like my word's gospel. Like, you listen to what I have to say. You know, you think about presidents and advisors or something, you know, you put yourself in a situation, you surround yourself with people who have been through situations that you haven't, and their word's good as gold. And that's kind of what Ahithophel was. In verse 23, it says, the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one inquired of the word of God. And so was all the advice of Ahithophel regarded by both David and Absalom. He speaks, you listen. You do what he says, because he's time and time again been maybe a trusted counselor, good advice, that sort of thing. So his word's gospel. That's kind of the way, and I say gospel, not in the way we use it, but that's just a figure speech. What was the purpose of Hushai staying in Jerusalem? I heard something. To thwart that. So we talked about that a second ago, and I'm bringing it back up because now we're talking about Ahithophel. So now David's left people in place. He knows how Ahithophel is regarded. And so he leaves Hushai, another counselor of his, there in hopes that maybe he can thwart this counsel of Ahithophel, you know, undermine it, maybe provide a different perspective or outlook. You know, you've got, you know, your best counselor there advising someone else. Then, you know, you want to do something, because if this guy is good as gold and his advice is dead on point, that's working against you. You know, you don't want him setting you up or him causing your downfall or demise. So moving into 17, chapter 17. So we know about Ahithophel. What did Ahithophel counsel regarding David?
Ahithophel wanted to go after David.
He did want to go after David. What? At night?
Immediately. He didn't want to leave him any time to prepare.
Okay. At night, immediately. What else was it listed as a part of that? They wanted to take 12,000 men with them. All right. What does he say in verse 3 about it? And then it says, the return of everyone depends on the man you seek. Ahithophel knows if David's still around, the people aren't coming back. You do away with him, you're going to get the people back. They're going to recognize you as king. Their loyalties are no longer to David. David's gone. So, you know, the return of everyone depends on the man that you seek. Then all the people will be at peace. So I asked you, how was his counsel viewed or received? And I'm thinking of Absalom. How did Absalom receive it?
He was pleased.
He was pleased.
And even the elders was pleased. They liked that. That's just another sign of how fickle, you know, people can be. Now, these are supposedly the wise men of Israel, the leaders of Israel, and here they are agreeing to this.
Mm-hmm. Now, do y'all think this was a good plan?
I mean, yes.
Okay, so yeah, we're talking about strategy. We're talking about strategy and politically, you know, how does this plan shake out? Do you see any flaws in his plan?
In Ahithophel's plan?
Yes, in Ahithophel's plan. We want to analyze this for a second because of how things shake out.
I thought so. They have this element of surprise. If they went tonight with 12,000 men, that should overwhelm David. And if all they did was get David, then he gets the full household package.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those advisors who know how to run a royal, you know,
it does, and it's not kind of leaving it out there. You don't have this problem sticking out. So you're taking 12,000 men, the night that he's left, or the day he's left. You're going that night. You're going to pursue him. You know, it talks about him being weary, exhausted, and terrified. Verse 2, it says, "I will come upon him while he's weary and exhausted and terrified." And that word "exhausted," I've got this reference. It's a slack of hands. You know, he's going to be worn down from travel. He's got these people fleeing with him, but they want to strike the king down so they can return him. You know, this is this immediacy there.
But you also have to keep men that are used to fight.
Well, and we'll get to that in a second too, because that's where Hushai slides in. Because I agree. So I put in here on mine. I put, you know, well, was he weary? You know, you're thinking about this. There's things you don't know. It's just interesting because of how this council shakes out. Was he weary? It says he was refreshed once he got to the fords of the wilderness. And then, you know, flee and terrified. I thought about the same thing. These mighty men. David's got his mighty men, and there's that are listed, and they're not only just good warriors, valiant warriors, but they're smart. And so, is it a good plan? I think from the standpoint of it being immediate. The standpoint of you're going to chase after him and try to catch him while he's still kind of out of sorts. Now, this is why, I mean, Ahithophel's word is gold, you know. So, there, you know, we want to analyze what he's saying because, you know, you've got somebody else who's going to offer up counsel in a different manner. So, yes. We get Ahithophel's kind of commentary on this, and as we talked about our commentary, and I think you're going to see he agrees with us to an extent. So how did Hushai feel about the advice of Ahithophel, and what did he say were its flaws?
It was not good.
It was not good. And what were his comments, as we've talked about it?
David's men were mighty, fierce, and they're expert at warfare.
Expert at warfare. And so I'm going to read that section of 7 through 10. So Hushai said to Absalom, this time the advice that Ahithophel has given is not good. Moreover, Hushai said, you know your father and his men, that they are mighty men and they are fierce, like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. And your father is an expert in warfare and will not spend the night with the people. Behold, he has now hidden himself in one of his caves or in another place. And it will be when he falls on them at that first attack that whoever hears it will say, there has been a slaughter among the people who follow Absalom. And even the one who is valiant, whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will completely lose heart of all. For all Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, and those who are with him are valiant men. Hushai, to me, seems like he is a great orator. He's a storyteller. He can sell you the air around you. I mean, he can sell you, what is it, oceanfront property in Arizona, the George Strait song. He can sell you that. He paints a very good picture enough to put doubts in Ahithophel's counsel. You think about that. Your father and his men are mighty and they're fierce. I completely agree. 12,000 men. You got 12,000 men with you. From a strategic standpoint, I don't know how many people David had, but either it was 600 or a few thousand. But you're driving 12,000 men on him who are warriors. Not all the men that he had are warriors. On top of that, your father is an expert in warfare. He may or may not be in the camp that night. But it also talks about that he is a mighty man. David's getting up there in age, and we're going to see that he's soon retired from battle. But Hushai is selling this idea that he's going to thwart Ahithophel's counsel. He's selling this idea that that's not a good idea. David's a vaunted enemy and opponent. We need to do something else. And so what was Hushai's counsel?
Absalom lead an army and sweep David out. Yeah, he wanted Absalom to go.
He wanted Absalom to go, but it is. So that was the major difference. But he's like, not just 12,000 men. You need to call all Israel, all the men of Israel together from Dan to Beersheba. You need to bring them together. We'll read verse 11. But I counsel that all Israel be surely gathered to you from Dan even to Beersheba. And as the sand that is by the sea in abundance, that you personally go into battle. Like, you know, Absalom, you need to lead the charge. Show your power. Show your might. You go and you put this down. You go put David down now. So we shall come to him in one of the places where he can be found, and we will fall on him as the dew falls on the ground of him and all the men who are with him. Not even one will be left. And if he withdraws into a city, then all Israel shall bring ropes into that city. We will drag it into the valley until not even a small stone is found there. I mean, can you imagine him and his counselor sitting around and you start getting the warm fuzzies, the tingles, like the prestige and the pride that you're going to get from that, the glory of battle that you're going to get when you put down finally David, this vaunted leader of men and these mighty men who have been with him. Okay, that's what Hushai is selling. He's selling this idea of not just a defeat of David, but he's selling this glory and honor, and you be the one to go out there and you be the one to lead the army. What are the pitfalls of that counsel? Absalom kind of exposes himself a little bit. If he was a smart leader, he wouldn't have gone out to himself. All this is negated by the fact that God's going to do what God's going to do. So if God chooses for him to win, God chooses for him to lose, it's all by God's power. 12,000 men are the entire nation of Israel. David will win if God wants him to, and we'll see that. But it's just interesting how, to me, as you read this, you know, you read the dramatic effect of Hushai and how he can have an influence over these men. Because it says in verse 14, then Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. But for the Lord had ordained to thwart the good counsel of Ahithophel so that the Lord might bring calamity on Absalom.
So that point, I'm not sure what exactly is intended for us to stand with that, the good counsel of Ahithophel. Was it actually going to be effective that what Ahithophel said for, you know, removing David from the picture? Is that what good counsel means? Was he just generally being a good counselor? He was an advisor to David. He's a good advisor to Ahithophel on how to, you know, build his dominance. You know, Ahithophel defected before David had to flee. He was already drawn over to Absalom, at the beginning of the coup conspiracy. So Ahithophel helped rise Absalom to the top of, usurping David's power. So if you call that good in the sense of effective, I kind of looked at this as, okay, this even qualifies. Ahithophel's advice was going to be effective for the purpose he said. But Hushai, obviously his recommendation wasn't effective because Absalom didn't win. So that's why I was thinking, you know, even this verse gives more support towards Ahithophel's advice was going to be the way that could have removed David, but God did not intend that to happen.
Every plan has pitfalls. Every plan has problems. But it does seem that he's specifically discussing these plans and the fact that, yeah, maybe Ahithophel's counsel would have been the more prudent action. I mean, no plan, and we can poke holes in them, but no plan is without its flaws or its limitations. But yes, it appears that the big difference being that Absalom going into battle. Yes, sir.
Game of Thrones-esque intrigue, and God is like out of sight. You know?
Well, it doesn't strike me as Absalom being an actual man of faith, and I'm with you. I don't know that God would have answered had he inquired, being that he, you know, usurped the throne of his anointed, and then you saw David and his heart. He wasn't going to raise a sword against the Lord's anointed, whereas Absalom is trying to kill him. So, yeah, turning towards the Lord. And ultimately, David, when we see him leaving, we talk about if the Lord would have me, I would do the same thing. I don't think the Lord's even in the mind of Absalom. You see the ungodliness that he has continued to follow. I don't think that's even all. I mean, it would have been a smart decision, but would the Lord have heard him? Probably not.
So, and Hushai was sent just to hear and give the information to Zadok, who gives it to the sons of one of the other priests. And he's supposed to bring that information to David. But here Hushai gets called to advise Absalom. While Ahithophel's advice was being perceived continuously as good advice, why did Hushai get called to speak to Absalom? Remember, David sent him there just to hear what the plan was and send it back. But here Hushai comes to advise.
No, and not just to hear. It says to thwart. It does say he was left to thwart the council. So not just to hear and advise. He is a spy and to let him know what's going on. But he was left there to thwart, to do exactly what he did here, to thwart the council. So it was twofold for his. Go back and thwart the council. As another counselor, trusted advisor David, he's there to undermine Ahithophel's. But if you think about it, you're in a position where Absalom's no dummy and Ahithophel's no dummy. So your council has to be good, but maybe in a way that will help David in the long run, which it does.
Which is another, like, with Hushai's advice was meant, this advice meaning to Thwart, and ultimately God ordained this to be a message to Thwart that plan.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks to, Matt just mentioned about where God is. That's where I see God being in this, him bringing Hushai, giving him this audience, giving him this message, or at least having this message, the effect that God intended to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's where God is still very much an influence in the ultimate, you know, David's, you know, return, and he survives this coup.
Yes. Now we've already answered. We'll move on down. We've already answered several of these questions following. So, how was David warned? Well, Zadok and Abiathar sent a maid to Jonathan and the other guy. And then they went to David. Where does David flee to? So we've talked about how he's come out of Jerusalem through Bahurim to the fords of the wilderness. And then he flees across to the Jordan River and into Gilead. Along the way, and I put this as just as a tagline. It's interesting on the who aided David that it was Shobi, the son of Nehash, along with a couple other guys. Shobi, the son of Nehash, was a son of Ammon. And the fact that he would be there to help David was just an interesting aside. What happened to Ahithophel and why?
He killed himself.
Killed himself. His counsel wasn't followed, and so he killed himself. And was that pride? Was that usefulness? Was that honor? Arrogance? I don't know. But we see that because he wasn't listened to, that he killed himself. So, and we've got about 5 minutes, so we'll finish this up. So, this sets the stage. David's left. Absalom finds out that word has gotten to David about what's going on. He's found out where David has gone, and so you set the stage for this battle. Moving into chapter 18. So, David sets his commanders up, and he wants to go out to battle, but why did David not go out to battle?
The people invited him not to.
Mm-hmm.
He's putting
Mm-hmm.
And,
sir?
And he went out of the city, took his men, and put them in danger.
He put them in danger too. He, it says here, but you are worth 10,000 of us. Therefore, now it would be better that you be ready to help us from the city. Absalom's going to lead the charge. And David's done this. Leaders of armies do that. You go and you fight. David would go and take the glory towards the end of these battles. We saw that in his later life. But, you know, David, not only was he worth a lot more as a figurehead of the nation, or because people were loyal to him and were willing to fight for him, as opposed to him leading the charge, knowing that he was safe, knowing what kind of a good man he was, or for the fact that it says he was an expert in warfare. So being a mastermind, he could orchestrate what was going on in the battle. And you can, I feel like, kind of see this here, because Absalom comes to David, seems that David has chosen a good area for them to battle. What is David's order concerning Absalom, and who heard all this?
To deal gently with
Absalom. Who heard that? All the people. Now, why? I mean, again, we wonder sometimes about David, you know, the love of this son over God after everything that he's done. But that's the order that was given. So we're heading into this battle. Where was the battle, and what is said or known about this place? Forest of where?
Ephraim.
Forest of Ephraim. What do we see about this? There's something in one of the verses that kind of tells us a little bit more about this place. It's the people, huh?
People of Israel were defeated
prior to David. Yeah, verse, huh?
They killed a lot more people than the soldiers did.
Yeah, for the battle was spread, this is verse 8, for the battle was spread over the whole countryside, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. So as this battle sets up, you see this export warfare. If David chosen, it would seem so that would be the case, that David chose this place, and now you're fighting in and amongst this underbrush or thicket. I did some looking just to kind of have a better understanding of the place, and just a lot of growth, a lot of underbrush. You're trying to fight, especially from horseback or mounted cavalry, and you're up in the trees, which presents a problem for somebody in a little bit, you know. But that's the idea, that it's, you get so hung up, you lose your advantage, massive amounts of people. This forest is going to wreak havoc on you from the standpoint of knocking people off horses, you know, riding through trying to fight. It could cause you to lose a battle from the standpoint of fighting somebody, and it hangs you up with a sword, or, you know, there's a lot of different stuff. But it devoured more people than David's people did. It says that they slaughtered, that they was great, 20,000 men. How was Absalom killed? And this is, gives us an idea of the place that they were fighting. Mm-hmm. So
Joab
went and killed him. So we tend to think hair here, and it says head, and you can read different things about it. It says head. So, your hair is a part of your head, but it says head. So there's a possibility he's riding, and he actually gets stuck on the fork of a tree, hanging there, can't get down. Or he had long flowing hair. Maybe his hair got hung up. But either way, he was caught. And I think it says suspended between heaven and earth. Joab comes up and shoves spears through him. This was what Hushai was hoping for, is that David would see an opportunity, or his men would see an opportunity, when Absalom went out to war, to thwart the counsel of Ahithophel. It was the Lord's plan that Absalom would be thwarted. Then we have the last two questions that we're about to be buzzed out. But why did Joab not want to send Ahimaaz to report? That was not really of any consequence, other than, you know, he was one of the priest's sons. Him bringing word would be maybe good news. And we see that he delivers news that they've won the battle, but ultimately that Absalom has died. He waited for the Cushite. And then how did this is the important thing as we move into our next lesson. How did David react to the hearing of Absalom's death?
He wept.
He said, he wished he would die instead. He wept. He mourned. He said, I wish I would have died instead of you. And that'll set us up for lesson number 16. All right. Thank you.